Looking ahead, challenges and opportunities in the changing world. Welcome to Talking Economics, podcast launched on the occasion of the 30th anniversary of the Center for Economic Research and Graduate Education, Economics Institute. Has the pandemic had a substantial impact on energy economics, or are the fluctuations in supply and demand of energy something the markets are used to? How does the growing focus on climate change affect this interdisciplinary field? My name is Katarína Stehlíková, and today I will be discussing these and other questions with Sylvester van Cotten, a SERGI PhD alumnus and senior researcher at the Faculty of Social and Economic Studies at the University of Jan Evangelista Purkyně. Sylvester specializes in energy economics and economic experiments with a special interest in the economics of electricity markets, renewables, and regulation. Welcome, Sylvester.
Thank you.
So, energy economics, has the pandemic affected this field? And if yes, how?
Well, if you look in the newspapers, then of course it jumps on you and you see, oh, there's such big changes. Demand went down for energy in general, and especially in the fuels for transportation. Oil went down a lot, really. Price fell, and now we see the demand is booming again and the price of oil jumps up. So in the short term, you definitely see something. However, in the long term, actually not much changed. Price changes, price jumps are very normal. Oil goes up, then it goes down to the bottom sometimes. But in the long term, and then I especially think about topics like the availability of fossil fuels on the one hand, and the problem of global warming on the other hand. In the long term, very little has changed. We see a small decrease in emissions, but that's no surprise. Economic activity was suppressed. Now it's coming back, and also emissions are booming back to the old level.
Let's focus now for a moment on the short term and the fact that the electricity prices have tripled compared to the last year. Some providers went bankrupt. So do you foresee any, what would you say to this short-term impact, and do you foresee any longer-term impact of this?
Well, as I said before, this is a short-term effect. On the one hand, we have the COVID. After the COVID lockdown stopped, we have demand booming back, a huge demand. And that is not just here in Europe or in Czech Republic, but it's basically over all the world. On the other hand, we see some problems with supply of gas, especially. So gas has jumped to incredibly high prices. And because gas usually sets the price for electricity, we also see that electricity prices are very high now. Now, what happens sometimes is that you may have companies that write contracts with consumers where they fix the tariff they pay. But the electricity and the gas that they deliver to them, they buy it on the spot market. Basically, this is not a way of responsible doing business. It's a kind of gambling. And then you see there may become these times that the price goes very high, and then these firms suddenly see they have to buy it very expensive, sell it very cheap. They make enormous losses and go bankrupt. This is, of course, a very bad effect.
So how long do you think this short term will last? When do you expect that the prices of gas and consequently electricity will not necessarily return to the previous levels, but at least go down?
They should go down about by March 2022, because then the winter is over. Basically, we have these high gas prices because we had the increase in demand of COVID, of course. Then we had a more colder winter last winter. It was more cold, so we had actually less gas in Europe. And the same was actually also true in Asia. So therefore, the demand over the whole world is actually much higher. But this should get better once spring happens. And if the winter turns out not to be too cold, the price decrease might happen even earlier.
Is the situation in the Czech Republic specific in any way?
Well, the Czech Republic, the situation is the same mostly in most of Europe. We see the same thing in Asia happening. Maybe one thing that you could see relative to Europe is that Czech Republic is a little bit more energy intensive in its economy. So for each dollar of GDP that's generated, Czech Republic uses more energy than the rest of the European Union, or at least than the average European country. So therefore, such changes will affect Czech Republic a bit more stronger. Also, the GDP in Czech Republic is a bit lower than the average of the European Union. So if commodities such as gas and then also electricity, if they increase in price, this will have a stronger effect on the people than in a more rich country, say like Netherlands or Sweden.
Was there any impact possibly on the geopolitics of this? Are the countries trying to be more self-sustained and more afraid of the globalization?
That's an interesting question, and I actually wouldn't know.
So you don't see anything like this happening in the energy markets, that countries would be afraid of, you know, increasing reliance on Russia or other producers of resources?
Yeah, but I would say there is not really a fundamental problem with supply. Yeah, there is enough energy, there's enough gas, there's enough oil, coal for the rest of the century for sure, and probably longer. Gazprom is rather professional. Mm-hmm. And then there are also some new developments in Russia. You now have big LNG, like Novatek, that's the new independence. And they work on LNG, and part of this LNG goes exactly to Europe. So we don't only get our gas from Russia through the pipes, but also some by LNG from Russia.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So do you see any challenges actually for the field caused by the pandemic?
No, not really.
And
it's a small fluctuation. I'm sure there are people who will disagree and they say, look what happened to the stock market jump up. But yeah, these are very short-term effects. But for the long term, for the big questions, how much resources are there and what is happening with global warming, basically nothing really stopped, really changed.
I think that's actually a positive response that, in a way, you know, there is a field which wasn't greatly affected by the pandemic because I think our lives were really affected. So this is good and we can focus on the big questions.
So I wouldn't totally agree with you here, because if I read some newspapers, for example, The Guardian, they seem to say, oh, look, during the pandemic, the emissions went down. This is a change. And now we have to make sure that we don't go back to our old ways of thinking. So this little change heralds a new era. Yeah, but this is dream thinking. This is dream thinking. It's just emissions went down because the economics were suppressed.
And do you see this possibly as a topic for research? Like, is this something that the economists could look into and give evidence?
Definitely, definitely.
Provide evidence that this is not really so this is something that is a topic for research for the future.
Yes, why not? Yeah.
And so speaking about the big challenges, the big questions, what would you say are the three biggest ones in energy economics?
Well, first of all is, of course, the decarbonization, which is a program that has to be implemented. But connected to that is actually that if you look at the numbers with a clear view and an honest view, we have to prepare for a warmer world because it's going to happen. And I know this is a very unpopular point because politicians are still touting the number of 1.5 degrees, 2 degrees, but I would say that's a past station. Yeah, I mean, a lot of positive thing happened in European Union. European Union is definitely the leader here in decarbonization. Very serious. All kind of measures have been implemented over the past 20 years. Just now in July, there is a new package ready, a new law package fit for 55, where 55 reflects the percentage of the reduction in carbon emissions in 2030. So for 2020, we had 20%, and we just managed to hit this. Mm-hmm. We managed to hit this thanks to the pandemic. Because the pandemic, Germany would not have, everybody said, okay, Germany is going to miss the target. But they managed it because the economy was suppressed. So we just managed this. And now we have to go to
from 20 to 55 in 10 years. I'm glad I'm not responsible for this, you know. This is a goal that is gigantic. But anyway, there's now a new package of laws, and I must say they look good. They address actually a lot of points that I think were very wrong in the past 20 years.
Could you be more specific about some, you know, key things that were wrong and are now fixed?
Yeah, well, we have, of course, I think the main, as an economist, it's actually quite clear what is the solution. Global warming, from an economist's point of view, without the politics, is a very simple problem. It's what we call a problem of externalities. Yeah, we drive a car, we burn petrol, we emit CO2. Now, this CO2 gives damage to the whole world. Yeah, over its lifetime, say over 100 or 200 years, and you can try to calculate that. So this has been tried to calculate it, and some estimates say that each ton of CO2 is about $30. And this will grow slowly with the interest rate. 30, some people do different calculations, you get 60, but probably not more than $100. Mm-hmm. So what should you do? It's very easy. You actually unleash the power of capitalism, of the market to solve this problem. So you're not going to do this by a Soviet-like central planning committee. You put a tax on the burning of any CO2, on the emission of any CO2. And in that case, people actually internalize the cost. Now, maybe people will not drive less, but if it's becoming more expensive for you, you have people in the industry who start to think about it because they're always thinking about how can we improve our bottom line. And now suddenly there's this tax on it. So they're going to change their processes. This is the primal way. And this is already for 150 years.
Yeah, this is economics 101.
Mm-hmm. Economics 101. Well, yeah. But it's economics 10 for many politicians. it's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. So we have a solution, but we don't see it really implemented, or do we?
Right. We are just talking about what was good about this new package. So we have a cap and trade trading mechanism, and this works more or less like a tax. It puts a price on carbon. And this is very successful. It's a very successful measure. The only problem is it covered only less than 50% of all emissions. So this package will actually broaden this and a bigger percentage will be part of it. So this is good.
Mm-hmm. And this is effective since?
This is being discussed. And so there's this big package for the 55% target in 2030. And I think just in July it came out and it's being discussed and must be approved still.
Energy markets is really a big question for politics, and I think we can speak about the European Union, which is doing its fair share, let's say, and trying hard to fix the situation. But then there are all these other parts of the world which are not really following suit, right? Is there anything economics can do about this, or is this purely politics and there is nothing we can do?
That's difficult, yeah. I would say Europe has taken the position of the example country. Yeah, we are a rich continent, relatively rich in the world. We advanced and we show that we can have an advanced economy that works well and where we do not contribute anymore to global warming. And then we just have to hope or entice or somehow push the people around us to follow us. And it is not easy.
Pushing people and providing incentives, maybe there would be a way that we limit our trade with countries which do not price the emissions the way we do.
Yeah, exactly. So then we go back to this package Fit for 55. There is talking about a border tax. So if you have a country, say, that wants to import steel into the EU and they have no climate policy at all, then we say, oh, okay, we assume then that they can certify themselves that they have papers saying how much CO2 did they produce, and we will tax them according to that. And if they don't have such papers, then we will make our own estimate. So these are the plans for the future. And with that way, first of all, you create a level playing field within Europe, so that steel firms can just produce in Europe, that they don't have to leave because they cannot compete against Chinese or Indian steel. On the other hand, you push some of your policies actually outside your borders, and you hope that they will follow suit because they really want to deliver goods to Europe.
So we'll see. One side is the pricing of the emissions. The other side are subsidies for new sources of energy and the renewables. Is this a challenge or an opportunity?
It's a really challenge, especially for me, because, if you look at economic theory, you must always have a really good reason to come with subsidies, because subsidies are, it's very hard to target and precise. Basically, we ask here the government, or a central planning committee in a sense, to pick the technologies, and this is what they have been doing. Yeah, they say, this wind here, this solar has to be subsidized. And then some academics later evaluate that, and they look actually at what was the cost of these measures per ton of abated CO2. And these costs that come out are just eye-watering. So, for example, wind in Germany, we're talking about 60 till 150 euro per ton of CO2. And remember that the best estimates we have of the damage that a ton of CO2 does is around €30. But this is not the worst. Then you go to solar, we jump. From the past decade, we jump to 500 euro per ton.
Impressive.
If we go to Italy, we jump to 1,500 euro per ton for the solar. And the wind is somewhere 1,000 euro per ton abated.
Well, I assume that when we are, trying to do innovative things, we may hit some roadblocks and we may hit dead ends. And so it's the price we need to pay for innovation. The question is if we are learning from the mistakes. Do you see any improvements in this area?
Well, I totally agree with you, that I'm not the only one. This is a very general, generally acknowledged opinion. You need subsidies for activities that that the market can't do well. And research is one of them, innovation, maybe even some learning by doing projects. But the subsidies that have been sunk into wind and solar are not of this kind. It's about mass deployment. So there's huge rents that are shifted. And given that the money is not spent effectively, you basically lose a lot of money. You waste money.
So what is the economist's take on that? Do they explain to the governments, okay, guys, this is wrong. We need to go to the simple solution.
Yes, definitely. There are many economists who do this. But what I noticed, and this is a little bit insidious, I don't want to say it's a conspiracy, but I go to these energy conferences and then you have these people and then they got some grant, and the grant was specifically like, how can we better fit wind into Germany? And one of my colleagues said, this actually doesn't really make sense. Yeah, it's really wasteful, and we could have, if we managed to get the carbon price, we would do this for a fraction of the cost. We would do this for half or one third of the cost. And then the guy said, I agree. But they decided that it will happen this way. And then we were asked to look only how to do it the best. So actually we minimize the harm. We minimize the harm of a stupid decision. But they don't write it. I would be fine if they did that, if the first sentence in the paper, or at least the footnote, was, by the way, this is not a clever policy. You can do it for one half of the price in another way, but you chose to do it this way, and now we analyze it. That would be real academic honesty.
But these disclaimers are missing, you say, so...
Yes.
We are calling
I've seen one paper that actually does this. I was really, really pleased.
Impressive. So what about you? Does your research focus on the pricing or on subsidies as well?
Well, I've done some work on forward premia, forward markets and spot markets. I really like this because It sounds so simple, right? You have a forward market and a spot market. But it turns out that a forward market has a competitive effect. It increases competition. So I did a project on that. But of course, a forward market is also used for to hedge your, you want to buy or you want to make sure today that the goods you buy tomorrow, the electricity, has a certain price. So you already write a contract now, and that's a forward. So I did a project on that as well, and both were, all these projects were finalized and published. But now actually I got a grant from the EU, and it is about, so I'm actually one of these people that I just mentioned, which is specifically about how to, in a cheaper way, implement wind in Europe. It's about auctions. Now, why do I do that? The auctions that you get are really interesting. Like there's some technical intricacies about it that are really delicious to analyze. We can do simulations, we will do an experiment. I have with a colleague great plans for this. So that is great. But yeah, to be honest, I will have to put my footnote here that, yeah, there is a better way to do this.
Which is excellent, right? Maybe through the footnotes, things will change.
Right.
And you have interesting research which will minimize harm. The question also I had was the pandemic, going back to the pandemic, did it have impact on your own research? You were doing also experiments, so was there any slowdown in your projects?
For me, I know the pandemic is a terrible thing and it's dramatic, but I'm an academic, and for me it meant that I had no interruptions. Teaching became like minor, and I could really focus on finishing some of my papers, and I got like three of them published in this time. So for me it was actually a good period for focus.
Quiet period.
Yeah, but now I'm happy, of course, that things work again.
But it would be difficult to run some experiments during the time, right?
Yeah, sure.
So this was limiting in a way.
Yeah, but if you do an experiment, a lot of time, most of the time goes into preparation, or even working on theory, then you run the experiment. That's maybe 2 weeks' work.
And so you can time it the way you need.
And then afterwards you have again 1-2 years writing the paper, polishing the paper. Well, you know, the publication process is very, very slow. So.
Okay, perfect. I'm glad to have an example of a person and a field which was not that much negatively impacted by the pandemic. I think it's a good change. So to conclude, would you have any closing thoughts about the evolution of the field?
I think the main thing is that we really should prepare for a warmer world. I mean, of course, we have to try what we can, but the realistic expectation is 2 to 4 degrees hotter world, and it's better to focus on that. The other thing is that the EU should really improve its policies. The Fit for 55 package that I mean, I only mentioned the positive points, but there's also a subsidy shower that is going to be intensified for hand-picked technologies. So this is not a good thing. So it would be a hope that EU at some point manages to change its policy and make it efficient, thereby cutting costs by a factor of 2 or 3. Because if we really want to show the world how to do it well, we should do it efficiently and not say, well, look, we rich guys, we can do it, but it's very expensive. Yeah, we don't want that. We want to show it that it's relatively cheap, that it's doable also for them. And that's not happening at the moment. This will be very, very expensive.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.